Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Red Men TV. It is the Red Men Weekly Podcast. I'm Steve Hall, bringing you the best clips from our Red Men Plus content from the past week. And we have got some absolute belters for you. I say it every week. If you want these shows in full, redmenplus.com is the place to go. You can get these shows in video and in podcast forms. And now that we're in December, I want to let you know about our Legends prize draws. Every day between December 1st and December 25th, we are doing a prize draw for any of our Legend tier subscribers. So if you want to go involved, listen to these shows in full, watch them, and be in with a chance of winning some amazing, amazing signed Liverpool memorabilia. We've got stuff signed by Carragher, Lucas, Dirk Cow, we've got Chris Kirk, and we've got Ibu Konate signed shirt that we're going to give away on Christmas Day as well. So get yourselves involved. Redmenplus.com. Sign up as a legend. Even if you pay the $9.99 just once, pay it for 1 month, you will get in 25 prize draws, as well as getting access to all our amazing content, including some of our specials that are coming out over Christmas as well. So yeah, we've got you covered, so go and check them all out. I mentioned our great content, the first of which this week was the Biased Football Podcast. It was Paul, it was Chris, it was Chloe, and it was special guest Keo in having a big old chat about the world of football, because quite frankly, it's quite funny laughing at other teams.
Tottenham Villa, I've described it as an offside-erific game. I wonder whether, because this is two teams who are going to be fighting out for that fourth place so far. Because I think everyone was making a big deal about Tottenham early on in the season, and rightly so. They were playing good football, they're absolutely buzzing, they're having a good time with it. Likeable manager, all that kind of stuff, and then you've got Villa kind of ticking along. Villa are doing this with European football. So as much as we're like kind of praising Tottenham, they're playing one game a week, and so that realistically what they've got, it shouldn't be a great shock that they're starting the season okay. But the fact that Villa are getting what they're getting, but also managing to be competitive
we talk about like turning points in the season and stuff. Like, Villa's away form has been shocking. So for them to go and get a result against Tottenham away from home and actually, you know, put a marker down, gives them that belief to maybe kick on and stuff like that. Like, they're a good side, and I think they've got the third best manager in the league.
See, it is an interesting conversation, because we were talking about Arteta before this show, Keo.
Yeah.
And I've had this for a while. Whenever a new manager comes into the league, it goes back to Ten Hag. And like, Man United are buying a new manager, and at best, he's only ever going to be the third best manager in the league. But there is this, like, who is that? Who is the third best manager? I think logic would say it's probably Arteta.
Why? Logic looks at trophies.
No, exactly. But this is why I think it's an interesting point that you even mentioned that, because you've got him, and then we mentioned Pochettino as well in that conversation. Like, yeah. But Unai Emery might be the third best manager in the league. So why are we shocked that Aston Villa are doing so well?
I don't think anyone is shocked anymore that Villa are doing.
It's a great question, though. Who is the third best manager in the league? And I have not thought about it before, so it'll probably take me about 20 minutes to come to a conclusion. But, I mean, you're right. The currency is trophies, isn't it? And great managers win trophies. Emery has got a record of that. I say, following what we were saying off air before, I think he was really, really poorly treated at Arsenal. I think it was product of whoever came in after Wenger was going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that with teams over the years. We've seen it United, we've seen it Liverpool, we've seen it everywhere. So I think he was a little bit harsh, and I think he got the pistol out of him a little bit because of his, you know,
racism about how he talks.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it wasn't pistol out of him, you're right. But he's gone to Villa and he's putting a side together. Like, I don't want to play Villa. Do you want to play Villa at the minute?
No.
Very glad we've played them. Yeah. Very, very glad.
Do you know what I mean? So I probably, the way things are going, lean towards that. I do like the Tottenham manager. I do like him. He was a professional when he came in. They looked good at the start. I mean, I know he said some things after the Liverpool game and contradicted himself a couple of weeks later, but I'd expect our manager to do that. I wouldn't expect our manager to come out after we've just won a last minute winner and we shouldn't have and say, you know, that wasn't right. So that's all by the by. So yeah, I probably lean towards Emery, but do like the Tottenham manager, but we're going to have to see him at a top level for a little bit longer, because obviously the countries he's managed in, the teams he's managed, haven't competed in Europe.
Unai Emery is just incredible as a manager. He's such a lovable character as well. Like, he's one of the managers that I sit there and I'm like, I actually think he's boss. Like, I've got nothing against him. He's pleasant. And you know what? I haven't actually seen him go over the top with reactions or anything. But when Aston Villa got that equaliser the other day, you saw the emotion and you saw maybe, you know, the away record, even though they're doing so well. I'm thinking to myself, if we could just get a couple more points away from him, my God, we could literally be sat top of the table. And I think you saw the emotion come out after they got back in the game, and he's creating a fortress at Villa Park. It's already a great atmosphere, but with him as the manager and the way they play, it's exciting football. It's not shit football. This is incredible football. He's gone and bought great players. Diaby, unbelievable footballer. He's making Ollie Watkins a real good number nine.
And not just against us.
Against everyone. Yeah. McGinn's great.
He's really good. You
know, Luca Dean, he's made him a lot better. He's got Martinez, Matty Cash playing sound. So you've got to give him credit, and I think he's a brilliant manager. I think he's the third best manager. I think Arteta still needs to prove himself, but I think he's a good manager. And it's hard not to like him either, to be honest. Like, I just like him.
The thing is as well, like, you know, I think sometimes you can get carried away, can't you, when you think about what the teams have done in other leagues, managers have done in other leagues. Like, I think at the time everyone thought Gerrard was going to succeed at Villa, especially after the start. Mate, he took a very, very poor Gerrard side and has turned them into something where...
The contrast is massive, isn't it?
It's huge, and that's the difference, isn't it, between a good manager and an average manager or whatever, that you can do that. I mean, you go into this league season and you're thinking, Chelsea are going to be back, Tottenham are going to be up there because Postecoglou's a good manager, Manchester United, another season under Ten Hag, should be ahead of Aston Villa, Liverpool should be ahead of Aston Villa, Arsenal should be ahead of Aston Villa, Man City should be ahead of Aston Villa, Newcastle should be ahead of Aston Villa. I mean, these are all teams. Brighton should be ahead of Aston Villa. He's doing a brilliant job, and he's got to do it for the whole season, of course. But we do look at it game week by game week, don't we? So you can only take it on what's been played so far.
And if you're a Villa fan right now, how good would that feel to be, you know, playing good football with a good manager? Because everyone says it. Villa's a good club with a good ground, a good history and all this stuff. It must feel good in there at the minute, mustn't it?
Also, they've got a chance of winning that Conference League. He's literally got a chance of bringing them silverware in Europe.
They might be the favourite because of him.
Exactly.
Yeah. And his European experience.
No, but I come back to this a lot. You know, this is where the football's moved on, and, you know, it's gone are the days of, like, get 11 lads out on the pitch and tell them to work hard and pass the ball around and go enjoy yourselves, or go and work harder than the other team. We spent plenty of time with, like, Roy Evans, and it's mad to talk to him. You know, I've been lucky enough to talk to a number of Liverpool managers over the years. Talking to Jurgen Klopp about football is well different to talking to Roy Evans about football. They just think about it completely differently, and that's because football's kind of moved on. You need to have a good manager to be a successful team. Now you do. You need to have a manager who's got something, because if you've got boss players, everyone's got boss players now. Every team's got players who can score goals and
scouting beat systems, etc.
You know, this is it. You know, Premier League is quite. People think, oh, is it a lower another level? I just think it's a general raising of the level. It's a very competitive league, and you see it in the dugouts. They can be the difference. A manager who knows how to react, who knows how to conduct himself, knows how to ingratiate himself with the fans and all that kind of stuff. They're really, really important things. And I look at those other guys who are outside of Guardiola and Klopp, and yeah, it's. I mean, Arteta will, I think there's probably a lot of Arsenal fans who would take umbrage with us not automatically saying he's the third, at least the third best manager.
He's just a wish, Guardiola. I've said it before and I'll say it again, mate. He's never going to be better than Guardiola. He's just always going to be worse than Guardiola.
For me, it was the... I didn't watch the whole documentary, the All or Nothing Arsenal one, but there's a scene where he wheels out two speakers and he starts playing You Never Walk Alone on the training pitch. And when I seen that, one, I was shocked, and two, if I was a player there, I'd be thinking, you cheeky bastard, do you think I can handle this?
Yeah.
Have you really got to go to this? Instead of talking about shape and tactics and how we beat this Liverpool team, you're playing You Never Walk Alone on two speakers and saying, this is Anfield, this is Anfield. It's not, it's an Arsenal training pitch, and you're embarrassing me and yourself. Do you know what I mean? And that's the difference between elite
nothing
manager.
Steve Bowen, could you imagine wearing the white scarf singing You'll Never Walk Alone?
Just whipping it in the faces. This is what it'd be like. This is what it'd be like.
Exactly. So it, for me, that's, there's a gulf between the Guardiolas and Klopps, and then the next category, and that's the difference.
I think the silverware thing, just to go back to it, is important, because pedigree, and actually I think it shows that you've got an ability to deliver based on past performance. Now, it's interesting because Arteta, he's only managed Arsenal, so it's not like he can have that back catalogue of hits. He can't, he's not got 5 years like Ange Postecoglou, who's played in all kinds of mad leagues, or, you know, and has racked up silverware, rightly so. I remember seeing Flav making this point about how, like, you know, it's comparable, because if you've been the top, you've managed the top team in your league, then you've managed the top team in your league. It doesn't matter if then Man City are better than that team. You can only manage within the levels that you've worked at. So success is success, and that's a useful, that's a transferable skill, because pressure exists at every sort of level. But Arteta, it's hard. It's just genuinely hard to judge where he's at. He's won an FA Cup and a Charity Shield.
Maybe two FA Cups.
Let me have a quick double check. But either way, it's not a hard. No, he's won one. He won the FA Cup in 1920. He's won two Community Shields, 2020 and 2023.
He's doing a good job, by the way. I'm not sitting here saying he's a shit manager. I think he's a really good manager. And you know, it's said with a bit of a sarcasm, isn't it, about the wish Guardiola and stuff like that, but the point stands. I don't think he's ever going to be better than Guardiola. I don't think he's going to make a team that's better than Guardiola's team, and certainly not with the resources that Guardiola's got available to him as well.
If you're trying to copy what Guardiola's doing, using his playbook with less money and less experience and Manchester City players the Pep's team not good enough in your squad, then it's a genuine shock if you're able to. I feel
he looks love drunk when he looks at him in the eyes, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to beat a man who you love that much.
Yeah, it's true. But just on, in terms of what other managers have won, you know, Unai Emery as a manager has won the Europa League three times, as we well know. He won Ligue 1. He's won two French Cups.
I thought it was four. I thought he won three with Sevilla and one with Villarreal.
Two League Cups. He's won the Trophée des Champions twice. He was the runner-up at the Europa League with Arsenal as well. That was with Sevilla, you're right. Then I'm going club by club. Villarreal, then he won it with them as well. So yeah, sorry, I apologise, you're right, he's got four Europa Leagues. Then you go to Mauricio Pochettino, who was Football League Cup runner-up in 2014-15, Champions League runner-up in 2018-19. He won one Ligue 1 with Paris Saint-Germain, he won the Cup with them, and he won the Trophy, the Champion with them. Mikel Arteta, we've mentioned him already. Ange Postecoglou, I haven't got enough time on the podcast to list all the mad silverware that he's won.
Australian, the OFC, Australia, under-20s
Championship. Brilliant, well done, mate. He won the Scottish Premiership twice, Scottish Cup, Scottish League Cup twice as well in that time. And one manager we've literally basically not mentioned other than in passing is Erik ten Hag, who won three Eredivisies with Ajax, the Dutch Cup twice, the Johan Cruyff Shield once. He won the Regional Liga with Bayern Munich two in 2013-14. Did you know? The League Cup with Manchester United, by the way. So yeah, there's lots of managers who've won silverware. So we settled, though, Unai Emery, do we think?
Yeah, and you know what's mad when you look at that? The start of the season there, or last season, if you'd have said Emery or Pochettino would have been put above him, wouldn't he? Because the way he was treated and because the way it went for him.
Yeah.
But that record there and them trophies is... Yeah, I'm going with him.
He's done more than Pochettino's done, and no one thinks about the fact that Unai Emery was PSG manager, which is funny.
Yeah. I reckon I'd have still said Unai Emery last year just because of how crap Pochettino was at PSG.
Yeah,
because, seriously, you did basically have what Manchester City have. You had an endless amount of money to spend. You had the world's superstar right now in Kylian Mbappe. You also had Neymar, who, I don't know what he does actually, to be perfectly honest. He tore their league
apart. Scores lots of goals. It's a surprising amount of goals.
Yes. You also had Lionel Messi, the world's greatest to ever play for me. And he didn't know how to control them all. He wasn't a good manager in that sense. His tactics might have been great, but he underperformed in pretty much everything. It was probably lucky that he actually won the French League, because at one point they were doing horrific. I actually think that really damaged Pochettino's not career, because he's still a top manager, but if you're not wiping the floor in the French league, there's something not
correct. Well, it's weird because it helped him a bit, because he can at least point back and go, I've actually won some trophies now. Yeah. So actually, it was a thing that was missing from his CV, but no one looks at it and goes, he made an absolute stellar success. Yeah.
And it's happening again. It's happening again right now. He's in the same situation as City. God, he has all the money in the world, any player you want, and he's sitting 10th in the league. So
with Nicholas Jackson up front.
To answer Keir's question, I would have gone Pochettino, you know, and I think it's more to do with the fact that it's the style of play. You're always sort of, I think you're drawn, aren't you, to people who want to play with the ball and dominate possession, whereas it's harder to go, yeah, I really want him in charge, who's going to sit back and hit you on the counter-attack. Because I don't think you'd want that, would you? Atletico Madrid's manager, he might be the best manager in the world for what he's achieved with the resources against Madrid and against Barcelona, but it's the style of football, you think, fucking hell, I'd never pick him.
Yeah, it's interesting, really is interesting. Yeah, apropos of nothing, there you go, I didn't expect us to dive into that. Let's just quickly jump back to a wonderful start off Tottenham Hotspur. They're the first team to have ever won their first 10 games then lost the next three, which is just wonderfully.
I saw that on Match of the Day too.
Yeah, wonderfully Spurs.
Classic Spurs.
I just love the idea of that. It's like, yeah, you know, just having a good time with it, though, aren't they?
That looks fun. And like, even speaking to Flav, obviously he's a Spurs fan and does the Fighting Cock podcast and stuff, he's just happy that they're playing good football. And you know, after you go through fucking defensive managers and shit like that, I think there's a core of Spurs fans, certainly Flav is, he's very like we are as Liverpool fans, who just wants to go and like, they want to win things, of course, but he's accepting that you can't win every trophy all of the time. It's because you are up against fucking better clubs.
Yeah.
From the outside looking in with Tottenham, what annoys me the most is they seem to be changing the belief system in there. Now, they've always had that we're Tottenham and we're probably going to collapse here. But, and although they have won 10 games and collapsed, like, they do seem to be a little bit more optimistic. They're feeling around the place, and it probably helps with the result that happened against us. And you can see them after it, they're all partying in the seats and their tunes were on, and I thought, that's not like Tottenham, that. Do you know what I mean? So they have changed a little bit, but he's got to have to get back to winning ways, because to win 10 games and lose 3 on the bounce, that's just Tottenham all over.
It reminds me when Everton were top after like 5 games.
Oh, September.
You know, they won all them games at the start, the first 3 or 4.
Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah.
Well, even like, they even did it with Rafa as well. Like, they're fucking laughing. Oh, this is it. You know, you kind of Spirit of the Blues or whatever the fuck it was, and they're all like, oh, this is great. And then just relax a bit, lads.
But the Tottenham thing, it's just like, I think I'm with Keo there. I am a little bit annoyed because I think they've got their Klopp. I think that's what he is.
They wouldn't swap him for anyone now,
no,
would they?
Because they're just tapped into him, aren't they? They just know. And I think when you get a manager who's really good and is completely in keeping with who you are as a fan base, boss things can happen.
Yeah.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Thanks to Paul, Chris, Chloe and Keo for that one. Keo was in, of course, because we were just announced that he will be joining us on our live tour. Yeah, we're going to Dublin and we're going to Belfast in March. Tickets are available now. We're going to do our usual shenanigans on stage, but then it's Keo, who's been on fan park stages. He's done the Boss Night stuff. He's been at Liverpool kit launches. He'll be on stage with us too. So yeah, if you're in the island of Ireland and want to come and check that out, whether you're in the Dublin area, up in the north, in Belfast as well, come and check us out. It's going to be an absolute belter. Right then, moving on, it's Journo Insight time. Delighted to be joined by Neil Jones this week. And yet we had a chat. Liverpool have been linked with a move for Aston Villa's Douglas Luiz, which seems a little bit far-fetched. Is it far-fetched? Well, I asked Neil Jones just that. Let's move on then to a couple, well, one transfer story that raised. And it's a player who's been in the spotlight a while, right? Douglas Luiz has been linked to a couple of reports to Liverpool. My first suggestion was like, Aston Villa would be absolutely bananas to sell anybody in January, considering the season they're having as well. But it's another defensive midfielder. It feels like we're getting linked to every single defensive midfielder around the world. Since the Andre stuff seems to cool down, Neil, it is another one that's come on the press. It doesn't feel like too much, but he's a really good player, and you can see why everyone's going to be wanting after him. But
yeah, I don't think he's a defensive midfielder to start with. I think he's just box to box now.
Isn't
he's a really good footballer, isn't he? Yeah. The two of them, him and Camara.
I think John McGinn's brilliant.
John McGinn's a good player as well. Absolutely, Villa are a good side, aren't they? At the moment, flying. He was linked, obviously, the back end of the summer window last season. He was talked about, and I remember speaking to someone at Villa, and they were like, absolutely no chance we're selling him. Certainly not late in the window, but at any point, he's obviously someone who I think is boosting his reputation big time at the moment. He's been in great form. You know, he plays a lot of games as well. I think that's another feather in his cap. You know, I think he doesn't miss many. But like you say, I think it'd be a difficult one to get him out of Villa. Certainly mid season. Maybe next summer if they were to sort of really go down that route. But what would he be age wise? 26, 27?
He turns 26 in May, so yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. So maybe just on the sort of cusp of being the right kind of age, but yeah, I'd be surprised if Liverpool were sort of going to put all the money in that. I think it'd cost them an absolute fortune to get them out of Villa. There's a few of Villa that you'd sort of say are in that position. You know, Jacob Ramsey, obviously, Luiz, Camara, McGinn, Watkins. You know, they've got some, yeah, Diaby, you know, they've got a lot of assets there, but they're not in a position where they're needing to sell players and comply. They're actually in a position where they're building, aren't they? So yeah, I think Douglas Luiz is probably one that's going to be staying at Villa.
Yeah, the report from 90 Minutes says Arsenal obviously tried to buy him in 2022. Yeah. They continue to want him, Manchester City and knocking around as well.
He came through at City, didn't he?
He was previously at City. I can see the links because I think he's brilliant, but that January especially feels like a non-starter for that one. Looking on January, we spoke about it briefly a couple of weeks ago, but we are getting closer, obviously, to the window opening. Is there anything in the squad that you think, you know, Liverpool could really absolutely do with? Because listen, Liverpool have got loads of midfielders. They might not have an actual number six, like a specific one, so if they want to do that potentially, but I remember going to last January, and I'll be honest, I thought it might have been a defender. They ended up going to sign Cody Gakpo. Sorry, I thought it might be a midfielder. And they went to end up signing Cody Gakpo, so who knows? Yeah. But I don't know, it doesn't feel like this January is one where we're sitting here going, they are absolutely desperate for X, Y, and Z. I think we'd all like him at number six, but it doesn't feel like Liverpool are going to be rushing into the market to do something?
No, I'm not rushing. I mean, there's 6 weeks or 5 weeks to go, or 4 weeks to go, which things can happen that can really influence you.
Every
you're thinking, yeah, or every, you know, as I say, you're looking at Jota, you know, you could more follow your attack all of a sudden looks light, and you think, oh God, we're in trouble. But the position they've put themselves in means they can be a bit more, I think, a bit more relaxed about it. And what they have done with Gakpo and with Diaz in the past is and Van Dijk in a different way, they've either corrected the mistake or they've brought forward a plan, you know, from the summer. I think they're in that position now where it's like, okay, well, if the defender or the number six or the left back that we feel is the one that we want long term, and all of a sudden there's a chance to get them in January when we can maybe do that, as opposed to solving an immediate problem by, you know, going and getting a Ozan Kabak or a Ben Davis or a Stephen Corker. Fingers crossed they're not in that position. They've obviously... January's not the toughest month in terms of schedule. Obviously, they've got the big issue of Salah and AFCON around that time, but it's not... Obviously, there's the FA Cup. Maybe there's a League Cup.
Two League Cup games.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, fingers crossed there are. But it's not the worst sort of schedule where you're looking and saying, oh God, like we could be in real, real sort of difficulty, you know, squad-wise there. I think Liverpool are, at this moment, able to be a bit more picky and choosy in terms of what they want. And I think that might explain why the Andre links have sort of, you know, or the Andre sort of situation has moved away. The desperation to get someone like that isn't as great. And if it is, or if they are going to do that, they may be able to, bad way of putting it, but set the sights a bit higher and say, actually, no, we want someone who we think is actually top, top level, as opposed to, you know, a potential option. I wouldn't rule anything out in January at all, but I think it might be more like the Diaz kind of signing or the Gakpo, where it's actually something that they were going to do in the summer, or they were planning to do at a later date, brought forward, as opposed to, right, you know, we need to go and fix a hole.
Yeah, I suppose as well, what you can do in January, you can assess where you are. If they are right in the middle of a league title challenge, you go, you know what, it's worth pushing the button on someone.
Exactly, and I think Diaz is probably the better example of this, that, you know, it wasn't an absolutely necessary signing at the time. They had Minamino, Origi, Firmino, Mane, Salah, Jota. You know, they didn't need another forward necessarily. But what it did do, it gave an impetus and it gave a freshness, and it sort of it upped the game of a few players. You know, Mane in particular, I think, stepped up in that period. And it can sort of just give you an extra bit of oomph.
Diaz scored in a Champions League semi-final.
Well, Diaz was man of the match in both domestic cup finals for Liverpool. You know, he started three finals after joining. You know, he was on the pitch, sort of. You know,
they needed him in Villarreal. They were getting battered.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it can work in that way where it's not necessarily the signing that's absolutely vital to make, because you know your squad's in so much disarray, but it can just give you something that you didn't even know you were missing almost. Yeah. You know, I think, what was the line from Pep Linders? Water in the desert. Maybe there's someone who can provide something similar in the second half of this season. And if Liverpool are in a position where they're in the League Cup semi-final, they're through in the Europa League, they're in the middle of a title race, the more the merrier in terms of quality players, absolutely.
Thanks very much to Neil for that one. Yeah, Douglas Luiz. I think he's a great player. I'm not sure Liverpool will get him. Are they going to do any business in January? I'm sure we'll find out in the coming weeks. If not, well, about 2 months' time, we'll know for sure, won't we? Because January will be over and then we'll know who Liverpool have or have not signed. Right then, finally this week, the final word show. It was me again. I was delighted to be joined by Abby Ruckin and John Reid to have a little chat for the final word show about Liverpool's win over LASK and what it means for the Reds in the long haul. And of course, we had to chat about Liverpool's Egyptian King. We chatted about Mo Salah, and this is what we had to say about Liverpool's Egyptian King. Let's finish speaking about the attackers then, because the other goal, of course, John, comes from Mo Salah. He also assisted, it's worth mentioning, the second goal as well. It was his cross, wasn't it, to Diaz? He's inevitable. He is like, that's 199 goals for Liverpool now for Mo Salah. At the weekend, he'll be playing his 300th start, he'll be making a 300 start where he does 100% start against Fulham. He captained Liverpool, 199 goals, another goal, his penalty take, it was a great penalty, like it seems like his penalty taking's getting better. We wax lyrical about Mo Salah all the time, but I thought in that game, and we saw this against Lask when he came off the bench in the return fixture, he's just miles better than them. He's a Champions League level footballer playing against, with all due respect, the worst team, I think, in our Europa League group. He should look this good. But he did. Like he looked a level above them at all times.
He's just dominant, isn't he? I mean, you run out of sort of ways to describe him and things that he does. And I'm liking that it's becoming a bit of a meme. It was about sort of 2 or 3 years ago, you know, the sort of thing of, you know, the last person who broke this record was Salah. Salah's the person's then. But it's become a bit of a thing again that, like,
Only Mo Salah.
Yeah, only Mo Salah. He breaks your record every week at the minute.
Breaking his own records.
That's the thing. And it's like, I keep saying to people who, like, and I feel weird because I'm I like to think I'm not that old, but I keep saying to people who are younger than me, like, appreciate it, because it's like, you know, he is genuinely one of the best players in the world. Like, not just like, you know, I think at this stage we're well beyond the debate that he's in the top three, if you know what I mean. And like, just enjoy it, because you're not going to get to see it forever. And we've had it with other players maybe in the past, like Suarez briefly and stuff, where we've had players like that. But he was just phenomenal, and what I love about him is it's just no nonsense. Like, I never watch him. There's never a game where I watch him where I just think he's giving anything less than 100%, and where you see him play maybe less than, you know, 8 out of 10 kind of thing. He's just always on it. And, you know, obviously we were talking about Diaz then, saying how bright he was. So was Salah. You know, he was all over, and so much of our play in those first two goals came from him down the right side, and just stuff he was doing. And you could see as well, not that you couldn't with other players necessarily, but particularly with him, they were terrified of him. They just kept backing on. The second he got the ball, they were like, right, we all drop back 10 yards and just like, let's just try and contain him. You know,
I think they realised after that he ran rings around them for half an hour or something at their place. It is mad that, because he's fifth now, obviously he stays fifth on the all-time list. But like, I was thinking about this the other day, people of our era, maybe, I remember the end of Ian Rush's Liverpool career for a little bit, like in the mid-90s before he left. But if you look at Liverpool's top five, it's Roger Hunt, after it's Rush, Hunt, Hodgson, Little, you know, none of us will remember. There might be a couple of people alive who might have seen a little bit of more so of Ian Rush, probably. But like, this Mo Salah is like, we're living in the middle of like an all-time Liverpool great. We got to see Steven Gerrard. We got a little bit of some of them, but in terms of, like, if you look at the list, Gerrard, Fowler, Dalglish, that's who's just below him. We are in the middle of history here, and he's going to score his 200th goal, and he's probably going to get it on Sunday. That's what's going to probably happen here, and he is just remarkable. And I think it was fitting that he was the captain, because in the past Jürgen's give it to Gomez, hasn't he? He's gone like longest serving player, Gomez, whatever. Salah walks out captain's armband. He is just magnificent.
Yeah, he's phenomenal, and I honestly think sometimes people underappreciate how good he is. Like, when you think about in the summer when like the Saudi clubs were offering like 200 million for him, mm-hmm. like he's 31 was trending. Do you remember like people saying you've got to cash in that type of money? He's irreplaceable. Who'd you replace him with? There's no one that plays down that side that's on par or anywhere near. Or I mean, I'm sure Klopp as a manager, he molds these players into what they are. But Mo Salah, as he is right now, no matter what his age is, we've got, I think he could play at this form another few years for Liverpool. That's the sad thing though, is like, you're looking to the transfer windows and you're thinking like, please don't go, like what you give to us is so much more than anyone else. It's irreplaceable. And I know like you've got the likes of Harvey who can play there, like I prefer him in midfield, but the balls he's been threading up to Salah in these games have been brilliant, and he is irreplaceable. His stats are amazing. The amount of times he's like been an unused subs, only about 3 times. The amount of games he's had, his injury record's dead low.
Touch wood.
Knowing me, I'll jinx it, but you know, he probably will score that goal against Fulham. I'm captain and I'm in my fantasy foot. He wants it, you know, when he wants it, absolutely. You know, he's going to go for it.
That's 19 games he's played this season, John. 13 goals, 6 assists. Doesn't take a genius to work out how many goals and assists. You know, he's averaging a massive contribution every single time he steps on the footy pitch, pretty much. And he has, I'll be honest, there was a little spell there where Liverpool had a bit of a dip, and so did Salah, but he is a joke. And I thought sometimes Liverpool have been dragged down to the opposition's level. We saw that at Luton, for example. Liverpool got dragged into a game they didn't want to be. It felt like against last, Salah was like, nah, just not having that. Every time the ball went anywhere near him, his touch is just amazing. You mentioned they were terrified of him. There was space everywhere because he didn't know what to do. That is what you want your best player to do. Just go and dominate the game. He probably wasn't even playing 100%. There was more to give. If he really wanted to, he probably could have upped it. It felt like Jürgen said, look after yourself a little bit. You know, you've got a lot of games to play this season. He was unbelievable. Like I say, the penalty itself, he had a little blip there with the pens, didn't he, where he got his pens wrong. He's changed his technique. I mean, the goalie doesn't even move. I think he needn't bother because it was an absolute. That's a couple now on the run where he's absolutely buried these pens.
I mean, it was freezing, so I don't blame the goalie in that sense. But
just get off, yeah, just go on that floor.
On the floor. We all know where this is going. Yeah. Nah, you know, it was maybe the one sort of thing you could put against them is that, you know, there was a couple of pens. There was a run where he took a couple of pens and he kept missing, or they were saved. Where you were sort of at the time thinking, just give it to Milner. Like we need the goal. We need the
even this season, there was talk of McAllister and Szoboszlai, both really good penalty takers. The end of last season, he gets the one with, and it was like he missed against Bournemouth. Remember in the 3-1, I think he got the rebound and was like, ooh, a little bit. Then since then, Darwin scored in Lask again. By the way, good penalty. Since then, Salah scored against West Ham. He scored against Brighton. He scored against Everton, and he scored against Lask again. It feels like he's put that little blip to bed because he did miss against Bournemouth away, Arsenal at home, and then Bournemouth. He scored a rebound, but it was becoming a talking point. It feels like he's put that to bed now. He scored his last four all rather emphatically as well.
Oh yeah, and like consistently done it as well. You know, they're all recent games. You know, it's not as if he's done it over like a 9-10 month period kind of thing. So it's good. And, you know, what I like, and Abby sort of touched on it in terms of the consistency with him. Obviously, he's never, touch wood, he's never injured. But I like that he brings that. I feel very much as if he's setting the tone for the season. I feel as if for all the transfer speculation and all the rest of it, and it was like this when he signed his new deal, he's come back into the season and gone, you should all do that. You're all talking about that all summer, like, I'm here to win this league, by the way. You know, Europa League, forget that, I'm here to win the Premier League. So I feel as if he's brought that to he's brought it his entire Liverpool career, but particularly to this new team. He's set the sort of tone of, we go out and we do this, and as you say, sort of not being dragged down to a team's level. I felt as if he went out last night and was like, I'm Mo Salah and I'm going to do this. Everyone was talking about the goal, you know, in terms of, oh, he gets two more and it's 200. I felt as if, obviously, Gomez is involved in the Diaz goal. I felt almost as if he was a bit like, I'll let you score first. I'll set yous up and then we can get me to get my goal.
So I wonder, do I really want to score me 200 against these? I'll get off.
Usually
he's moaned when he gets taken off. He looked half all right with it, like, I'll save that one.
Yeah.
I'll box off 3 points of the weekend and we'll get that one. Thanks to John and Abby for that one. And yeah, brilliant. Mo Salah is just the absolute best in the world. He is absolutely fantastic. Right then, that is it for this week's Red Men Weekly. Like I say, go and get involved in redmenplus.com. Sign up as a legend. Like I say, even if you just do it for 1 month, you're effectively playing $9.99 to get yourselves in the hat for 25 prize draws, including a Lucas Leiva signed captain's armband, a Dirk Kuyt signed shirt, an Ibu Konate signed shirt, a programme signed by Jamie Carragher, and tons more Liverpool items. Some absolute belter stuff between now and Christmas Day. But yeah, thank you very much for listening to this one. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back with another Red Men Weekly next Friday. See you all then.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. but we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional and unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.